FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 9/19/17. I don't know if that's significant or not, but I'm sure the numerologists among you out there probably think it is. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that time marches on, everything evolves, whether it's your computer or your iPhone or your currency. And hey, as always, send us an email at kl@kerrylutz.com. So we're talking with an interesting individual who is billed as the godfather of BitShares. I'm talking about you, Stan Larimer, and the hero. Stan, you've got 40 years experience in software, hardware, and systems engineering and all that techie stuff. You even taught rocket science at the U.S. Air Force Academy, and you're CEO of Cryptonomex, a leading custom blockchain development company. So, Stan, with that out of the way, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, so cryptocurrencies, I've jokingly referred to them as kleptocurrencies. Is there any particular reason why we need over 1,000 cryptocurrencies?
No, but sometimes you need that many in order to get the few gems that are out there, and we definitely need cryptocurrencies. And the easiest way to understand that would be to just think about your bank, think about the things you don't like about your bank, and then think about how cryptocurrencies were invented to solve those problems and give us a new generation of better quality service.
Yeah, well, I try not to think about my bank. I bank at this bank down the street. It's called Too Big to Fail National Bank. And whenever they get into trouble, Uncle Sam is there to write them a check. Unfortunately, Uncle Sam doesn't treat me the same as he treats my bank. So if I want to basically stick it to Too Big to Fail National Bank, cryptocurrencies are a good way, aren't they?
They're a good way to bypass it. And it's even worse later. About bailouts or so yesterday, now they do bail-ins where they expect the money that I've deposited with the bank to be used to fund the bank's gambling habits, and they get the profits and I get stuck with any losses. So it's actually worse than what you indicated, because it's not just bailout. It's now you're really risking your own money with an unsecured loan to your bank that they can do anything they want with. Neat thing about cryptocurrencies is that you're your own banker. You have total control of your funds. There's no middleman, and you can send them anywhere in the world at any quantity for a very small price.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're the right person to talk to. I had this concept called Tulip Coin, and it's a real simple concept. It's going to be backed by tulip bulbs from Amsterdam, so it'll really have some backing to it, unlike most currencies, which are just basically confidence schemes, aren't they?
Well, there certainly are plenty of tulip coins out there that do exactly what you're saying. But I think the easiest way is to start with Bitcoin. How did it get its value? When it started out, it had no value. All we had was a suggestion by its inventor, Satoshi Nakamoto, that this could be good for a currency because you could pass tokens around securely over a decentralized network. Somebody speculated, wow, it's a currency. Maybe I'll buy up a bunch of them for pennies. And so they did. Over time, people started competing to get the limited supply. And the next thing you know, it had a few cents worth of value. Someone said, well, if I scoop up enough of these, I can send them to the other side of the planet and they can cash them in the same marketplace. And I have just transferred money. And guess what? Suddenly, Bitcoin started being more than just a speculations tulip bulb, but it actually had real utility, and people started wanting to have Bitcoin, speculating that more people would like that utility. And so over time, supply and demand, more people wanting it, more people speculating on it, drove the price up. And in that sense, it's got every bit as much value as real estate or gold or any other commodity you can think of whose price is determined by supply and demand.
Well, I'm glad you raised Bitcoin because basically, according to the algorithm, you can't produce any more than roughly 21.5 22 million bitcoins. So it's limited. And then there is no Bitcoin Corporation of America or Bitcoin Corporation of Asia or Europe. So it truly is a non-centralized, non-controlled currency. But what's coming out now, Stan, is the opposite. They allow you to make as many coins as you want, a lot of these currencies. And take Ethereum, for instance. There is an Ethereum corporation or entity that the government can somehow lean on, perhaps at some point in the future when it feels that it has to for some reason, in the name of chasing money launderers. They love the excuse of, hey, we'll take your cash from your car because you might be laundering money. How do we separate the real ones from the crap is really the question here, Stan.
Well, there's no substitute for doing due diligence and looking into it. Ethereum does have different properties than Bitcoin. It has some additional capabilities that are valuable to people in terms of being able to do smart contracts. It has limitations. It's no faster than Bitcoin, and both of them are very slow compared to, say, BitShares, which is light speed type, 3-second transactions instead of 10 minutes or longer. So you have to look at what it is, the utility of each of the different coins. And if the utility of the coin is nothing but I'm a clone that's got a different icon on the front that has a picture of a cute dog or something, then, you know, it's entirely up to the individuals who trade them to decide whether a dog coin is going to be of any particular value in the future. But I will tell you that each of these coins represents a backing community. And there's a lot of people in the Dogecoin, I guess is the way they pronounce it, who, you know, are just loving what the Doge founders do and the jokes they make and everything. And if it forms a community and that community competes to hold the token, then in some sense it has value, although there are other systems like BitShares that represent an entire digital currency exchange and could actually replace the entire global financial system. So you've got a lot large range of possible utility between one and the other.
All right. So the government decides it doesn't like your flavor of cryptocurrency. What is to stop them from shutting it down? I know for Bitcoin, that's not so easy. But for Ethereum, they could shut it down tomorrow if they wanted to, couldn't they?
Well, no. But you raise an interesting question. In Bitcoin, right now, one of the big myths is that it can't be shut down. As it was originally designed, that's true, pretty much, because it was designed to run on tens of thousands, if not millions, of computers all around the world. And it's really hard to go find all the users out there and shut them down. And if you shut some down, others will pop up and still do the job. Unfortunately, Bitcoin evolved in an arms race to get the biggest supercomputers. And right now, three companies out there located in China, with subsidized power and big factories full of computers, basically control the network. And if China wanted to go after three CEOs over there and tell them to change the code, they'd know exactly where to point the gun. So you got to look at how each is designed. And there is an algorithm for Ethereum that allows decentralization based on a different kind of algorithm. But it still boils down to how many big companies are, in their case, mining it. In the case of BitShares, it uses a delegated proof of stake type algorithm. And in that case, it's much more decentralized because the people who sign the blocks as they execute are forced to be decentralized, limited by how many total blocks they can sign to. Right now, about 5% would be the most any single user could do. And they're scattered all over the place. And what it requires to be a block producer on the BitShares system is reputation, which is hard to earn and easy to lose. And so anybody that misbehaves gets voted out of the system. And those who have worked hard in the industry get voted in, but they're scattered all over the world. And the instant you go to one of them and point a gun at their head, some other one pops up somewhere else and takes over that workload. So it's all depending on how the systems are designed. And in general, if you can keep nodes scattered across all 24 time zones, you are in pretty good shape. Obviously, if governments wanted to badly enough, they could stomp out any kind of behavior. But in this particular case, I think we're moving in a direction where there's going to be a right way and a wrong way to do digital currency. And the right way will be approved of by government. And so that we'll keep on ticking if you do it right.
All right. So, hey, let's talk about ICOs, initial coin offerings. They're getting a little bit harder to do, aren't they?
They certainly are. I think an awful lot of people that have done them are in trouble, and they should be, because in some cases they are absolute scams, fraudulent in their very nature, and clearly securities, and therefore clearly covered by U.S. security laws or China security laws or wherever. And, as the Howey case, the Supreme Court decision from back in the 1920s, proved, you can't even use a row of orange trees as a stock certificate. They can see through that. And just because it's a digital coin doesn't change how the government looks at it. But there is a way to do it. There's new laws that make it fairly easy. People need to watch out and see when they buy one of these ICOs, whether they're getting something that's been properly vetted and properly licensed, or whether they're getting a scam.
And this is the thing. So Bitcoin standard evolved kind of out of thin air, if you will. It was created. Why can't we have best practices for all these ICOs? And they tell us everything, tell us more than any initial public offering would tell us. Like, let's see every contract they've done. Anything short of a trade secret or divulging your company's strategy to the public. But everything short of that, everybody who's involved in it, along with all of their biographies, just let's see everything. So these things really become transparent. But it seems like nobody's in a real hurry to do that, are they, Stan?
Actually, that's not true. There's a new organization just coming out this past month or two called the TXSRB. That's the Token Exchange Self-Regulating Body. And the manager of that, John Gotts, is already been to the SEC, briefed him on his plans. He's been to, let's put it this way, lawyers who worked for the SEC, they're ex-SEC lawyers who wrote a lot of the current regulations. They gave him a wonderful round of applause and said, it's about time you guys started regulating yourselves. And of course, John's big message to everybody is, if we don't regulate ourselves, people who understand digital currencies and know what they can and can't do, we're going to get regulations crammed down our throat that were designed for a bygone era that don't apply anymore. And so he's working very hard to recruit and has done successfully. He's talked to most of the major coin leaders and pointed out to them, guys, this is the right way to do business. And if you've done it wrong, I can show you how to get compliant and clean up your act before someone comes knocking on your door. And so this is a huge new movement, TXSRB.com. And anybody that's interested in reading about it, including how to do a coin that is not a security, and what the differences are. There's about 9 different ways you can use coins that aren't securities. But if it fails the Howey test, it's a security, and you're not kidding yourself by claiming it's not.
Yeah, and all of them have been securities virtually from the get-go, with those exceptions of people doing it right, I guess, through crowdsource funding. So then you can avoid certain registration requirements. Is that what we're looking at?
Well, there are some new Reg A, Reg B things that just came out for crowdfunding that greatly ease the burden. And it's so much easier than it is to do an IPO in the past. It doesn't mean it's zero effort, but it's enough that it's worth your while to do it right than to take the risk of someone knocking on your door and throwing you in jail. But there are lots of things that you can use digital currencies for that wouldn't fall into that category. For example, frequent flyer miles. You can sell tokens that give people access, like Chuck E. Cheese coupons, to use a given asset. You can use tokens in a lot of different ways that don't involve the Howey test and therefore are not securities. And the Howey test says if you've got a common enterprise, you've invested money and an expectation of profit, guess what? That's enough to make you a security. So, but if you've got something else where, say, I'm selling tokens that are going to serve as tickets to get admission to something, there's lots of things you can do with digital currencies that would be safe. And that's what you can find at TXSRB.com, a list of the things that you can do that don't fall into that category. Ordinary tokens, but not security tokens.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So where there's a will, there's a lawyer.
Yes.
Right. And okay, so we can do this legally, although up to this point, not enough have for sure. But so what about the future here? Because we don't need all these currencies. Like you said, we're kind of looking for the best ones. You know, if you're just six pack and you want to get into cryptocurrencies, what do you look for here? Which ones? Name names here.
Okay. Well, you can look at Bitcoin and say, gee, in the past 4 or 5 years, it's gone from under $3 to over $3,000. That's a three factors of 10 growth. Ethereum's pretty close to doing that. What you'd like to find if you're a speculative investor is something that hasn't been discovered yet that is going to have the potential, at least, of growing like that. So you got to look at a number of factors. What is its unique value proposition? Does it do something that something else that hasn't been done before? Does it fill a niche, meet a need? Look at its development team. Do they have a good track record? Look at its marketing plan. Do they have a way of getting the communications out there? Look at its degree of connectivity with the rest of the community. Do they have a lot of supporters and allies different places? Read up on the white paper of how it works. Check out its community, because a good, strong coin is going to have a strong community supporting it. When you find all of those things aligned, then you say, okay, nothing's guaranteed, but at least it meets the minimum requirement of this could be the next thing to go up by a factor of a 1,000 growth in a couple of years. It can certainly happen. And then, you know, of course, you want to not put all your eggs in one basket, so pick several. Now, you said name names. I'm going to go into bias mode and tell you that as the godfather of BitShares, I'm going to tell you that BitShares is stronger than either Bitcoin or Ethereum were before they did their 1,000x pop. It's got a better promotional campaign, stronger team, stronger community, and everything is aligned for that one to take off. And if you want to see how that plan goes, go to billionherocampaign.com. That's where we're putting together a sort of a game-like campaign to give away $1 billion and let the public participating in the game decide who is going to collect that $1 billion. And right. You can read all about how that works on there, but that's our campaign to take this mainstream. One of the reasons BitShares should go mainstream is it's got a stabilized coin, a smart coin, that pays 5% growth every year. And so, you know, that is something that suddenly would be of interest to, say, retirees or people who can't get anything but negative interest on a passbook savings account. Hey, go get a few of these coins, store them away. They'll keep their hold their value and they'll grow 5% a year against the dollar. That's the kind of things that BitShares is all wrapped up in a nice package for people to look at. But don't take my word for it. Go join the community at BitSharesTalk.org. You know, talk to people, ask them why they're excited about it, and do your own homework.
Hey, so
that would be one I'd recommend.
BitShares, is there a limit on the number of BitShares that can be distributed, created?
Yes, there's a hard limit. It can never have any more than 3.5 billion, mm-hmm. and about 1 billion of those are kept out of circulation in a reserve fund that is used only in the case of where you can get enough people to vote to spend a little bit of it to add a new feature, to pay developers or whatever. It's mm-hmm. traditionally been in the past 3 years that it's been operational, extremely hard to get enough people to vote to spend that money, actually too hard, I think, because it was there to keep the system growing. But it's a combination that is wonderful because as more BitShares get purchased, the buying pressure drives the price up. And the Billion Hero campaign tells all about ways to cause that buying pressure and therefore growth in the overall currency.
Gotcha. All right. Sounds interesting. Sounds like it's addressed some concerns. And everybody is out there looking for the next Bitcoin. If you're interested in cryptos, then you're going to want to check out Stan's site. Stan, just give us the best site to find you now.
I would say just go to billionherocampaign.com. We're making that so that we can teach all the people who don't know about digital currencies how to get started. We even give away some free play money so you can try it out without risking anything. Once you've learned how to use it, you can decide what you want to do next. It'll take you through all the things you need to know. and let you compare the difference between Bitcoin and BitShares, which I would say is the difference between a Model T and a Starship. And I'm not kidding. There's 8 orders of magnitude improvement between the two. So don't just go out and buy whatever is the biggest market cap, because quite frankly, BitShares currently processes more transactions per day than Bitcoin and Ethereum combined. It's number one in what counts. It just hasn't been discovered yet. And go from there.
I like it. All right, Stan. Well, thanks so much for coming on with us. Any questions for Stan or myself, email me, kl@carrylutz.com. Our Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Our Twitter feed's @CarryLutz. And hey, Stan, let's hope your mission to stop cryptocurrencies from becoming kleptocurrencies is successful. And wish you the best of luck. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.